Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Probate specialist Elaine Byrne is here and she is ready to answer your questions about wills, inheritance, probate and all the complications that go with those issues. So you can email us todaycb@rte.ie or drop us a text 51551. Elaine, you're very welcome. Good to see you again. We're going to start with this one. It's about a property abroad. I have been left a property abroad by my late father, says this listener. Is the value of the property taken from my inheritance threshold here in Ireland? So that's the threshold and you have to pay tax beyond when you get beyond that threshold. Isn't that it, Elaine?
Yes, Claire. So, yeah, if the listener here, so the person inheriting the property abroad is resident here in Ireland, then our Irish tax law and the rules about aggregation will apply. So as a child, the listener can inherit, it's 335,000 that he or she can inherit from your dad tax-free. And then anything above that is going to be subject to tax at 33%. So as we mentioned then, so the value of that foreign property, it will be taken into account, and also then any prior benefit. And just for listeners, so a prior benefit, it goes back a long way. It goes back to the 5th of December 1991. So anything that we get, you know, from that date is taken into account.
That's a long way back.
It is, isn't it? So just then the final point for this listener. So just to check the law and the tax regime then in the country abroad, just in case there's anything to be paid there.
OK, now the next one. This is a question on behalf of my elderly neighbour, says this listener. I'm one of five siblings. One of my brothers is estranged and lives in the United States. A sister died last summer. She was not married and had no children. Her will clearly states that her estate is to be divided in equal shares with all her siblings except her estranged brother. Another sister predeceased her in January 2021. She was a widow with two children. Are her children entitled to inherit their deceased mother's portion? The will stated her siblings, not her living siblings, at the time of her death. Many thanks, and I hope this query can put my elderly neighbour's mind to rest.
Okay, so maybe if we call our five siblings, say A, B, C, D and E. So A is the brother estranged and living in the US, so he's out of the picture. So B then is the sister who died in the summer of 2020.
Sorry, the estranged brother doesn't get anything because he's estranged.
Well, because she hasn't mentioned him in the will.
Okay.
So if there wasn't a will...
So she explicitly said, I don't want him to get anything.
Yes.
From my estate. So that means he's gone.
He's
we don't
gone.
Have to worry about him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And he wouldn't have any entitlement to.
So he couldn't challenge that.
No.
Right.
He wouldn't. No.
Goodbye to A.
Goodbye to A. So B then is the sister who died in the summer of 2021. So we're discussing her will.
Okay.
So C then predeceased B. So she died in January of 2021. D is our listener and E is the final living sibling. So what's really important here is that the sister C, that she predeceased B as opposed to surviving and then dying. So in the circumstances, the inheritance lapses and it falls into the residue. So it's under Section 91 of our Succession Act. Now, the will could have provided for otherwise, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So everything here is going to pass to the listener D and the other sibling E. So they'll get a half share each. So C's family isn't entitled to anything.
That's interesting. Yeah. I would have thought that they were. That they were entitled to that sister's share.
No, so it's because she predeceased.
Right.
If she had survived and then died, they would have been, but because she predeceased.
Okay, that's interesting and very interesting for people who might be in similar situations to know that that is the case. Let's go to the next one. This is about an executor sale. I'm contacting you on behalf of my daughter and her husband and their three children. They went sale agreed on a house in January. This was an executor sale. They were told by the auctioneer that probate had been applied for in October and it would be through by March. But we're now in May and the stress levels are rising fast. They can't get any definite information from anyone about when probate will happen. In the meantime, they're in rental accommodation. The landlord wants to sell. Their three school-going children want to know where their home will be. Is this normal? The vendor applied for the probate herself rather than going through a solicitor. Could this be a problem? And the listener says, I think it's disgracefully non-transparent. It's not a new bike or a car. It's a family's home. And having committed to paying a ridiculous price for this home, they're left completely out in the cold as to when they'll be able to actually move in. Who should they be annoyed with? The auctioneer, the vendor, the probate office. Many thanks from a listener.
So look, this is a really difficult situation. And as the listener has pointed out, there's no definite time frame. And I appreciate it's cold comfort for this listener, but I think really the best practice in this area is for all parties, so the vendor, the auctioneer, the solicitor, to wait until the probate has issued, just to avoid situations such as this. Or if this isn't possible, at least to wait until the papers have been assessed and to make sure that there's no query.
Are you saying then that the sale of the property shouldn't have happened until probate had happened?
Yeah, I think so, because until probate has issued, there's nobody in a position to sign, to finalise.
You can't buy or sell that house until probate has been issued. Okay.
So yes. Yes.
But maybe cart before the horse.
I think so. And I suppose, look, in fairness to the probate office, they do have a statement on their website, and they highlight that when placing properties for sale, practitioners should take account of the waiting times, and the probate office will not expedite applications unless there are exceptional circumstances. House sales are not regarded in themselves as exceptional.
Okay, so there's not much they can do now.
No, sorry.
Just wait, sit and wait. This next one. I've been granted planning permission on my grandfather's land, but unfortunately he had a stroke before the site was signed over to me. He's not in a position to sign any legal documents now. He does not have it in his will for me to be left to site or to build on his land. It was a verbal gift. In his will, the land he owns is being split up between his children. I'm just wondering, where do I go from here? What is my best option, and how long will it take for the site to be transferred into my name, and what the fee would be for it all?
So this is a really tricky one, Claire. So I don't have any good news really for this listener, unfortunately. So look, your grandfather has had a stroke. So from a legal point of view, he has lost his capacity. Now, the listener doesn't mention it, but I just wonder whether your grandfather might have put in place an enduring power of attorney. So in this circumstance, your grandfather could have put this in place when he was well, maybe appointing a child to act on his behalf. And if this was registered, then that child as attorney could complete the transfer of the site to you. Now, if there isn't an enduring power of attorney, I suppose up until recently we had wardship. You could make an application to make somebody a ward of court. Now, this is being replaced by our new Capacity Act. So maybe an application could be made to the Circuit Court. I suppose after, if your grandfather passes, again, it's not straightforward because the site isn't mentioned or the grandchild isn't mentioned in the will. So maybe options could be maybe a family settlement. The other thing maybe is estoppel. So the concept that your grandfather promised the site to you and that you have an entitlement to the site on this basis. Look, the listener asks how long will it take and the fee, but just, I suppose it's just a really difficult one now. There's not any easy option there.
Time and money to sort out.
Exactly. Fair.
But you know, you mentioned enduring power of attorney, and it's probably good just to go back to that and to emphasise that that is a good thing for people to consider, isn't it, always? It's not easy to consider it and think about it, but it's very helpful when it gets to this point.
Yeah. Do you know, I think this question really illustrates it because, look, a will, it's going to happen as all. So, you know, we should make a will. I suppose an enduring power of attorney, we'd hope that we wouldn't need it, that, you know, that we wouldn't get to a point where we didn't have capacity. But if that does happen, really, an enduring power of attorney is the only, like, there's no easy alternative if you don't have an enduring power of attorney. And yeah, I think this question really highlights that.
Okay, so we should all think about that and putting it into our will. Is that where you'd put that request?
So it's separate. It's separate to a will altogether.
Okay.
But yeah, I would say.
But if you're doing one, you might as well do both, right?
Maybe.
Could you please ask Elaine if a person can have two different solicitors acting for them on the same issue? For example, can I engage as many solicitors as I can afford to contest a will?
Okay, this is a really interesting question. And look, I think there would be some listeners who might say that one solicitor is more than enough. So look, you can only instruct one solicitor regarding a matter. Now, you could, however, also engage a barrister or barristers. So you could have a solicitor, a junior counsel and a senior counsel. Now, just for this listener to bear in mind about costs. So in contesting a will or any litigation matter, there is no certainty in relation to costs. So you could find yourself in a situation whereby you are paying your own legal team, but in addition, you could be paying the other side's legal team, even though you didn't instruct them. And just as a general point, I would say that it is very difficult to overturn a will, a person's last wishes. So I think this listener, just to proceed with caution.
Be careful out there. We are a couple cohabiting for 15 years. One of us is still married without a divorce. We have both made wills ensuring that if one of us should die, the other will be the benefactor of the estate. Our savings account and credit union accounts are joint accounts. Can we be assured that our wishes are adhered to? Thank you very much for answering our question. If you can answer the question.
Okay. So look, I'd say, look, it's brilliant that you have made wills. And look, when we make a will, we can determine what happens on our death. But look, as against this, I suppose it's important to be aware of different pieces of legislation or cases that could affect our wishes. So the listener here mentions joint accounts. I think these are really useful because these will pass outside of the probate process. So if I hold something with another, it's joint tenant, the principle of survivorship applies, so it will pass to the other person automatically. So anything then in my sole name would go in accordance with the will and the probate process. So just for this couple here, I think one of the couple is divorced, or is that not divorced even?
Yes.
So just to be aware then of the legal right share. So it's provided for under section 111 of our Succession Act. So if there are no children, it's half. If there are children, it's a third. Now, there may be a decree of judicial separation, so maybe the legal right share could be extinguished. But if there isn't any legal paperwork in place, then that legal right share is there and is a consideration.
Okay, regardless of the will, it's still there.
It's still there. Yes, it's still there. This is really important. The other thing then, just to bear in mind, so I suppose there's a huge difference then in our tax treatment of a married couple and a non-married couple. So married couple, no tax. A non-married couple, then tax is a huge issue. And there's a little hidden gem, I think, Claire, in our tax legislation. And I just want to mention it. It is called Section 59 of the CAT Consolidation Act of 2003. It's a hardship provision and it gives discretion to the revenue commissioners to come up with an alternative decision on tax. So just for anybody, I suppose, particularly say a couple maybe not married where maybe the family home is passing to the other and there could be a massive tax bill. Just remember this section 59. It's really, really useful.
Okay, we're getting a lot of fresh queries in today about dementia and complications around that. So I want to come to this question that we have here. Is it true that if someone dies with dementia, their will is null and void, even though they made that will 20 years earlier when they were of sound mind and body?
No. So no, that is not true. What might happen, however, is that when it comes to the probate, applying for probate, so if the death certificate refers to dementia, but if it doesn't mention a specific period of time, the probate office may look for an affidavit confirming that the person at the time of making the will had capacity. So this could be furnished maybe by the person's GP or the witnesses to the will, or if there is a solicitor involved, the attendance notes taken at the time of the will.
Okay.
But it's fine.
It will not be disregarded.
No, it's fine.
What do I need to make a will? This person asks. It's from Chris. To make a will, do I need to bring deeds, statements from the bank, credit union, mortgage details, share details, value of house, list of dependents? Thank you. So what does Chris need?
So Chris, I'd say there's five essential things that you need. So number one is a copy of your ID and address verification. Number two is a copy of any previous will and details of why you are changing it. So say, for example, if in my earlier will, I left everything to Paddy, and in my later will, I'm leaving everything to Johnny. My solicitor is going to want to know, OK, why is there such a huge change? Number three then is details of your family situation. So in particular, I suppose if you're separated, if you're divorced, your solicitor is going to want to see all of those papers. So I suppose specifically just for that legal right share that we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Number four then, as Chris mentions here, details of assets, so deeds, bank accounts. Also, I suppose a lot of us today have digital assets and social media accounts. So maybe those details. And I suppose five, and most importantly, just your wishes. So what would you like to happen on your death?
Okay, a lot of preparation then before you go in to make your will.
Well, I think to get the most out of it and to avoid, I think by putting a bit of work into making your will, you'll avoid problems down the line.
Okay, Elaine, it's great to have you in as always. It's so fascinating, isn't it, to read these very complicated problems.
We weave
such webs, don't we? Thank you very much indeed. That's Elaine Byrne. And any questions for Elaine, she'll be back with us soon in a couple of weeks. So do get them into us, rte.ie/todaycb to listen back. And the email address is todaycb@rte.ie. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.